Hey, History of Persia fans. Before Persia, another civilization controlled the Middle East. The very first civilization, the inventors of writing itself. From the clay tablets of ancient Mesopotamia come the oldest stories. The history and myth of the first Mesopotamians is the subject of the Oldest Stories podcast online at oldeststories.net. If you like ancient history, come check out the Oldest Stories after you listen to this episode.
The history of Persia is intertwined with conquest. It began with conquest when Cyrus, king of a small city called Anshan, set out to build the greatest empire the world had ever seen. In a series of stunning campaigns, he achieved just that, becoming one of the greatest conquerors in history and basically started Persian history. After all, you don't get the title the Great for nothing. But he wouldn't be the last great Persian conqueror. Other Persian rulers like Darius the Great, Mithridates I, and Ardashir I would go on to become great conquerors on their own, establishing their own great empires and legacies. If you want to hear their story, and the stories of other great conquerors, many of whom are far less famous despite their great achievements, join me, Ramzi Shalah, on my podcast, The Conquerors Podcast, available on all platforms you listen through.
Above and beyond this country are the Caucasus Mountains. This mountain range, the Caucasus, rises to such a great height that its summits are never touched by rain or by snow, for they are above the clouds. But the middle slopes are continually filled with snow down to the very base. From this, it appears that the foothills are extremely high, being in no way inferior to the peaks of other mountains. Now, of the spurs of the Caucasus Range, those that are turned to the north and west extend into Illyria and Thrace, while toward the east and south they reach as far as the passes that provide entrance for the Hunnic nations inhabiting that region into both Persian and Roman territory. One of those passes is called Zur, while the other has been named the Caspian Gates from ancient times. The country that extends from the Caucasus Range to the Caspian Gates is held by the Alans, an autonomous nation, who are for the most part allied with the Persians, and march against the Romans and their other enemies. So much, then, about the Caucasus. Procopios, The Wars of Justinian, Book 8, Chapter 3, Lines 1 through 4.
Thanks to David from the Siegle.
In this perias operi, upro dau probindeba. Dharma.
Gamarjoba, and welcome to the History of Sakharovilo, Georgia. I'm your host, Roberto, and this is episode 35, The Battle of Tishkenitzkali. In this episode, we will cover the Battle of Tishkenitzkali and the actions that King Gubaz II and General Dagisaios took to win it. Just repeating this again, I am going to Georgia in early May, and I would like your support in helping mitigate research costs while I'm there. I want to take advantage of visiting historical sites, museums, and buying books to benefit the show, and would love your support. Every $100 donated will have me create a bonus episode based on something that I see in Georgia, and I will also be making a daily audio journal about my time there, probably released on a daily basis on my return in mid-May. You can go to tinyurl.com/sakharovilotrip or follow the link in the episode description. Now, let's get into the show. Victory for the combined forces of King Gubaz II of Lazica and General Dagisaios was short-lived. Despite pushing back the Persian army left behind by Mir Mirawe under the command of Fabrizus, Lazica found itself under siege once again by General Horionis. Horionis was a skilled commander with many years of experience under his belt, and he knew that bringing just the Persian troops would not lead him to victory. So he had brought in an army of Alans, or as we call them, Assetians, to augment his forces. Horianus led his men to a part of Lysica called Mocherisis and made camp along the Tishkenitskali River. Luckily for Horianus, this river was small enough to be forded by both infantry and cavalry, so he entrenched himself not far from the embankment. It did not take long for Gubaz and Dagistaios to learn of Horianus' position. They made their way to the Tishkenitskali River and made their camp on the opposite bank. There, the king and general debated their approach to the coming battle. After a lengthy discussion, they eventually decided that it was most advantageous to go on the offensive. If they did so, they could display their daring to humble and lower the morale of the Persian army. Once the army was made aware of the plan of action, murmurs grew from the Lazi troops, and they shouted that they would no longer consent to fight alongside the Byzantines, because the Byzantines were not risking themselves for their fatherland or their most precious possessions, so being on the offensive was easy for them. Lysicans were the only ones who were putting their wives, children, and land at risk. Worst of all, if they lost to the Persians, they would be ashamed and dishonored to the Lazi women. This stress was not conducive to them, and their morale was all gone. They did not think about their previous victories, since the loss of the second siege of Petra was still on their mind. Furthermore, they didn't even need the Byzantines. No imperial soldier could possibly match the zeal and bravado of the Lazican people. Gubaz calmed his men down and gave a speech, saying, quote, "Men, I do not know whether it is necessary to exhort you to courage. For those whose enthusiasm is sustained by the necessity of the situation would, I think, need no further exhortation, and this is the case with us in a present crisis. For the danger involves our women, children, and ancestral land, and, to speak plainly, our all, which is what the Persians are coming for. No one in the whole world gives way to those who are seeking by violence to rob him of any of his possessions. Nature compels him to fight for his belongings. You are not ignorant that nothing stops the avarice of the Persians when they have power in their grasp. And if they now prevail over us in the war, they will not stop at simply ruling us or imposing taxes or treating us in other matters as subjects, in case we forget what Hosro has attempted upon us not long ago. But let me not even so much as mention the experience we have had with the Persians, and let not the name of the Lazoi come to an end. The struggle against the Medes, my men, is not a difficult one for us who have so many times battled them and prevailed over them in the fight. There is nothing difficult in matters that we have become used to, the necessary labor having been previously spent in practice and experience. Consequently, we must despise the enemy as having been defeated in previous combats and lacking the same ground for boldness as you do. For when the spirit has been humbled, it tends not to rebound again. Think about these things and advance with high hopes against the enemy." End quote. The Lazi were moved by their king's speech and agreed to fight alongside the Byzantines. With a shout from Gubaz, the joint Lazi and Byzantine army advanced against the enemy. Ioannis Gouzes, the Armenian commander who attacked Petra without the support of Dagistaios, led the Byzantine cavalry from the far rear. Horianus, the Persian general, selected 1,000 men to act as scouts, armed and armored them in the best materials he had on hand, and sent them to meet their foes. He left a small garrison at his camp and went to meet the remainder of his army. In spite of their boast of their courage, the Lazi troops proved less than enthused about actually fighting the enemy once they entered the battlefield. Upon laying their eyes on the Persian forces, they did a 180 and galloped right back to the rear of the line, leaving the Byzantines to face the Persians alone and sending ranks into complete disorder. The joint Byzantine-Lazican defense devolved into a complete mess of retreats, counter-pursuits, and constant changes to the composition of the front line. This general confusion proved to be too much for one of the soldiers in the Byzantine army named Artabanus. He was a Pers-Armenian by birth, but became one of the rare soldiers to defect to Byzantine-controlled Armenia.
Hello and bonjour. My name is Josh Zucker, and I want to take you on a journey through some of the most exciting events of the late Middle Ages. Valois Burgundy was one of the medieval world's greatest what-ifs. Its dukes inherited, conquered, and politicked their way into forging a state between the German Empire and the Kingdom of France that rivaled them both. From the Hundred Years' War to the Holy Roman Empire, from urban workers to Joan of Arc, and from gallant knights to gunpowder weapons, the Grand Dukes of the West had a part to play in almost all of Western Europe's biggest developments in the 14th and 15th centuries. If you want to learn more about the glamorous rise and dramatic fall of the Dukes of Burgundy, please join me for Grand Dukes of the West, A History of Valois Burgundy.
Hello, everybody. This is Trevor Cully, host of the History of Persia podcast. From about 550 to 330 BC, most of the Middle East was ruled by the Achaemenid Persians. The Achaemenids pioneered the concept of a truly multinational empire, which incorporated people from as far away as India and Greece for over 200 years. The story of Persia discusses the fall of ancient civilizations, the origins of endurance racing, 300 Spartans, the March of the 10,000, and at least one evil priest who replaced and impersonated the king, all before falling with the dramatic close at Alexander the Great's conquests. If that story, and the story of the cultures that surround it, sound interesting to you, check out The History of Persia at historyofpersiapodcast.com, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
If you'll permit me a brief flashback, it is said that he once came before the Byzantine general of Armenia and gave a pledge of loyalty, promising to slay 120 Persian warriors, so long as he was given 50 men to accomplish this task. The request was granted, and Artabanus took his company to a fortress in Persarmenia. There, the garrison of exactly 120 men, how convenient, welcomed Artabanus into their fortress. Of course, they had no way of knowing he had betrayed the Persians and allied with the Byzantines. Once inside, Artabanus and his new Byzantine allies killed the 120 men and plundered the fortress. He returned to the general of Armenia with his promise fulfilled and joined their army. Now, back to the battle along the Tishkenitskali River. Artabanus understood what he had to do. He took two soldiers with him into no man's land, and the Persians did the same. Artabanus, seeing the Persians, welled up with rage and charged the biggest Persian soldier with a spear, killing him. Another Persian quickly struck Artabanus on the head with his sword. Artabanus' companion then pierced a guy on his left side. He withdrew the injured, but alive, Artabanus. Seeing two of their comrades dead and an enemy walking away with non-fatal injuries killed the morale of the Persian army, and they retreated. Seeing an opportunity, Gubaz and Dagestios ordered their troops forward, and the battle finally commenced. Ioannis Gouzes, the Byzantine cavalry commander, surveyed the battlefield and immediately assessed that there were too few of them to withstand the Persian cavalry charge. He then ordered his men to dismount, arrange themselves in the phalanx, face the enemy, and thrust their spears on his command. Just as Gouzes predicted, the Persian cavalry attempted to charge, but abandoned it when they saw the spears pointed their way. They switched their bows and rained down missiles, hoping to rout the Byzantines. The Byzantines and Lazi returned fire, and arrows rained down on both sides. Although the Persians proved the superior archers, as they could fire at a much greater rate, their arrows had trouble penetrating the Byzantine shields. The Byzantines proved the victor in the end when an arrow buried itself in the neck of Hordeonis, the Persian commander, killing him instantly and sending his body toppling face forward off his horse. The humiliation of his death signaled to the Persian army that all was lost. They retreated almost instantly with the joint Lazi and Byzantine forces in hot pursuit, each man hoping to kill as many Persians as he could. A faction of the Persian army called the Alans turned and blocked the entrance, hoping to slow the enemy down with another rain of arrows. Gouzes approached the entrance of the Persian camp, impaled a man upon his spear, and his troops captured the camp. This defeat scared the Alans back to the north of the Caucasus Mountains and the Persians back to Persia. However, in secret, another force of Persians had entered and exited Lazica, and they had just finished reinforcing Petra once more. Here we go again. To connect with us, feel free to find us on social media under @history_Georgia or on Facebook at The History of Sacagawea, Georgia. Our intro music is Bindis Peria Sopeli by Zadashe. They will be touring the U.S. in September 2024, so keep a nice lookout for them. And this is where I'd like to give you another reminder of the ongoing GoFundMe to help support my trip to Georgia. To help this podcast continue, feel free to subscribe to our Patreon or donate via Ko-fi or PayPal. The links are in the episode description, and if you would prefer donating something a bit more tangible, we also have an Amazon wish list for you to peruse. But the best way to help us for free is via review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcast host, as it goes a long way of getting the word out about the show and helping us reach new people to learn about Georgia. Also, just telling other people about the show works great. Madluba nanakvamdis, and thank you for listening to The History of Sacagawea, Georgia. See you next time.
Hey, History of Persia fans. Before Persia, another civilization controlled the Middle East, the very first civilization, the inventors of writing itself. From the clay tablets of ancient Mesopotamia come the oldest stories. The history and myth of the first Mesopotamians is the subject of the Oldest Stories podcast online at oldeststories.net. If you like ancient history, come check out the Oldest Stories after you listen to this episode.
The history of Persia is intertwined with conquest. It began with conquest when Cyrus, king of a small city called Anshan, set out to build the greatest empire the world had ever seen. In a series of stunning campaigns, he achieved just that, becoming one of the greatest conquerors in history, and basically started Persian history. After all, you don't get the title the Great for nothing. But he wouldn't be the last great Persian conqueror. Other Persian rulers like Darius the Great, Mithridates I, and Ardashir I would go on to become great conquerors on their own, establishing their own great empires and legacies. If you want to hear their story, and the stories of other great conquerors, many of whom are far less famous despite their great achievements, join me, Ramzi Shalah, on my podcast, The Conquerors Podcast, available on all platforms you listen through.